Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher.
Dear Black America, we love you. We affirm that Black lives matter. And as Black health professionals, we have a higher calling to stand for racial justice and to fight for health equity.
It's called a love letter to Black America from America's Black doctors and nurses. It's a message to address the devastating impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on the Black community. Now, this letter is less about affection and more about infection and what needs to be done with our community to address the latest surge. Joining me to talk about this are Dr. Martha Dawson, president of the National Black Nurses Association, and Dr. Reed Tuckson, co-founder of the Black Coalition Against COVID-19. If you have a question or a comment about COVID-19, the pandemic, the surge, and the kind of things that we are seeing as the numbers continue to increase in infections and deaths, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Tuckson and Dr. Dawson, thank you both for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Tuckson, let me ask you, because this love letter is on the Black Coalition Against COVID-19 website. Why a love letter?
What we have learned, if we've learned anything from this pandemic, it is that we are fighting not only a virus, but we're fighting the disease of distrust and misinformation. We as Black health professionals understand the four Black, historically Black medical schools, the National Medical Association, the W. Montague Cobb Institute of the NMA, the National Black Nurses Association, all of these organizations understand that we, during this horrific pandemic and the disparities in health status that we have historically faced as a people, we have to ramp up our game. We have to be able to say to our community, there have to be professionals that you can trust who are absolutely dedicated to you because we love you. We care about what happens to you passionately, and that you have to be some group of people who, when they provide information and expertise, that you can actually believe that it is coming from a fact base, not a misinformation base. And so, in short, Hal, what we have all done is to say all of these groups, for the first time, have put their collective and individual shoulders to the wheel and are saying to our community, enough is enough. We have got to do more. We've got to be more accountable to you. We want to do better in serving you. But at the end of the day, there has to be a source of trustworthy information and factual information. And we are stepping up to the plate and saying to our community, we are here for you, and we're going to work our tails off even more than we have in the past to help save Black life.
You know, Dr. Dawson, nurses are often seen as, you know, the foundation of love and compassion when it comes to treating patients. Patients often spend more time with nurses than they are spending with the attending physician. And as we have seen over these past, you know, 9 or 10 months or so, the toll that this is taking, this pandemic is taking on nurses. Can you talk to me a little bit about what you're seeing, what you're hearing, particularly for nurses of color?
Well, you know, being frontline workers, we're, like you said, we're right there with the patient more than any other healthcare worker, whether we are talking about the pharmacist, the respiratory therapist, or the physician. And our role is not only to provide physical assistance to the patient, but also that mental and that spiritual. So we take a very holistic approach to providing care to our patients. And the National Black Nurses Association members at this time, while they're out there working with patients, they're seeing it all. They're the ones that are there calling the codes when the patients are not able to survive. So they're the one who's going to call for a code blue or a code 10 or whatever the organization call it, meaning that a patient either is in respiratory or heart distress. And so what our nurses are beginning to experience at this time is they're getting tired. They're putting in, 12-hour shifts 3 days a week. Many times those 12-hour shifts now are going on to maybe 14 or 16 hours. They're off for maybe 1 or 2 days, and they're right back there again working. And with the public not paying attention and practicing the things that we need for them to practice, now we're seeing more healthcare workers that are being infected with this disease, and they're also dying from it.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about a love letter to Black America from America's Black Doctors and Nurses, an attempt to reach out to the Black community to fight the COVID-19 pandemic, as we are beginning to see incredible numbers in this surge. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Tuckson, talk to me about, you know, some of the latest news regarding this AstraZeneca vaccine report. This is the third company behind Moderna and Pfizer that is reporting what appears to be good news.
It is reporting good news. Again, still early days, and still we haven't all had a chance to get our eyes on the data. But from what we are learning, it has great benefit. And what we are particularly enthused about as we follow the course of the acceptance process for this vaccine is that it doesn't require the same level of refrigeration and other dissemination hurdles that the other vaccines may encounter. We are seeing that this is maybe a more convenient vaccine to use, and that is going to be particularly important for countries around the world who will not have the same level of refrigeration and other technical elements that the Pfizer vaccine, for example, will have. So this has a very significant potential. It works a little differently than the other ones, which gives us more options. And be able to figure out maybe this one may be better for some people, the other vaccines may be better for other people. So it gives us more options in our armamentarium, but also I think from looking at this as your audience has a world perspective, particularly throughout the Black diaspora, this vaccine may hold some special advantages as we think about people of color around the world.
Mm-hmm. I want you, Dr. Dawson, to listen to another part of this love letter to Black America and react or share your thoughts after I play it.
Our colleagues across healthcare know that we are urging our community to take safe and effective vaccines once available. However, for this to be successful, they must do more to earn your trust now and in the future.
Dr. Dawson, that's it. I would argue that's the heart, you know, of that message, the trust piece. What's your thought about that? Dr. Dawson, can you hear me?
You are correct. And yeah, that's another reason why we have come together to lend our voices, because we understand the historical fears around research as it relates to the Black population. We are very familiar with the Tuskegee Institute incident and some other incidents in research. But by us coming together, where you have both physicians and nurses, activists, researchers, and politicians and other healthcare leaders and big business saying, guess what? We need to do this together, collaboratively. And we're here tonight speaking on behalf of our people because we are a part of you. And we understand the fears. We understand the history. However, we also understand that with this virus, at this point in time, there is no other way to stop it unless we have a vaccine. And that's why we have our physicians and our scientists working with these companies to say that we need to see the data. We want to know what is taking place in the clinical trials. We want to see what are the risk factors and all of those things. Because if we can understand that, then we can better communicate it to our population, our family members, our faith-based organization. We can help our politicians and our nurses and physicians to better understand this. So it's going to take our voice being in our community. And that's one of the things I am so proud of with the National Black Nursing Association members. We have been in the community all this time working with faith-based organization, working with physicians, putting on health fairs, going into our schools, teaching hands-on CPR and how to stop the bleed. So people in our community, they know us, and I believe they will trust us. So it is so important for us to deliver this message, but not only deliver the message, but also to follow the science.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the COVID-19 pandemic and a love letter to Black America from America's Black doctors and nurses. John calling from South Carolina. John, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing, Harold?
I'm doing okay.
I am from the DMV. I left out of there in March to escape the madhouse because I knew exactly what was going to happen. I was in the military. I've been in, around public health for a while. I'm a health care provider, if you will. And I'm down here in the Carolinas deep. If anyone knows about the 601 corridor coming out of Monroe, going into South Carolina, it's very rural. It gets very rural. But when I go into the small town just to go to shop, I counted in 2 days, I came up with something like out of 10 people, I saw maybe 5 wearing masks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just incredible. I wash my hands. I use a hand sanitizer. I wear a mask. My question to your guest is how do we address our super conscious Black folks and the ones that are, if you will, willfully ignorant.
Interesting. I think that's a great question. Dr. Tuckson, your thoughts, and then, of course, Dr. Dawson, you can chime in.
Well, I think, first of all, we address it by having people making the comments and the observation you're making. We will not be successful at getting done what we need to get done to protect our health from this pandemic unless and until it becomes a part of our culture. And so what we need are people just like you who are speaking to each other, speaking to your friends, your neighbors, your relatives. And we have to reset the social norm for what it means to be a caring and rational human being during these times. A person who says that what I do makes a difference because it determines whether you will live or die. Not just about me, but it's also about you. So I think that the major step we take, my brother, is for people like you who understand the facts, who understand what you're supposed to do, and continue to spread the message one person to one person to one person. Meanwhile, while you're doing that, all of the health professional organizations that I talked about and other public health agencies will keep putting out the big messages, but this is a war that's going to be fought hand to hand.
Dr. Dawson.
First of all, let me say, it is extremely important. I believe by now, all of us know of someone, whether they're related to us or not, who have had this virus. And we probably know of someone who has died from it. We cannot listen to all of the earlier noise about this being fake and about it's going to go away by Easter. We are way beyond Easter and into the fall, and it is still killing people. And if we don't get this right, and it continue to infect our healthcare workers, I was just listening this afternoon, we're at the Cleveland Clinic. There are 900 healthcare workers who are now infected. If we get sick, then we cannot help you. And if you're hearing people's stories about physicians and nurses who have caught this disease, physicians and nurses who have died, that should be a wake-up call for you.
You know,
and wear your mask and take an extra clean one so that maybe if you run across someone, you can offer them one. But we have to be serious. This is a serious disease.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the COVID-19 pandemic and a love letter to Black America from America's Black Doctors and Nurses. It is a unique approach to trying to address the issues surrounding this pandemic, particularly as we know, and I think it still bears repeating, that communities of color, specifically, you know, African Americans, are disproportionately impacted by this horrible disease. And even as we see these numbers continue to increase, we still are dealing with people who are non-believers, people who are tired, who are continuing to try to live a semblance of normalcy that continues to raise the numbers of infections and deaths. If you have a comment, if you have a question, lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We have more to talk about after the break. Junes, we're going to talk to you calling from Germantown. Please do not hang up. If you're having difficulty getting through, please keep trying. I promise I will take your phone call. The original Quiet Storm on WHUR is next, but stay with us. This is a very important conversation. The Daily Germ will continue in just a bit.
Please wear your masks, continue social distancing, hand washing, and avoiding indoor events until vaccines are widely available. With the holidays around the corner, we want nothing more than to break bread with our loved ones. But tradition cannot stand in the way of our health.
Well, there it is. Another excerpt from the love letter to Black America from America's Black Doctors and Nurses. It is a message to address the devastating impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on the Black community. We continue our conversation with Dr. Martha Dawson, president of the National Black Nurses Association, and Dr. Reed Tuckson, co-founder of the Black Coalition Against COVID-19. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. June's calling from Germantown. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, I just want to say thank you for you guys to bring that problem today. But if you can reach out of a football player, basketball player, all those Black stars, if they can jump in the system to start talking to us, we appreciate it. It's the only thing I can say. If you can help us to get to those people, they need to start talking to us because it's hard outside.
Interesting. Junes, thank you so much for that. You know, Dr. Tuckson, I think Junes makes an interesting point. It's almost, you know, what we were hearing from high-profile African-Americans with messages to the Black community about voting. But, you know, I think this is a kind of a different situation. You know, some people would say that when it comes to voting, you know, hearing from celebrities, is it going to make a difference from you? But with this, do you think that hearing from celebrities, high-profile people, could this have a bigger impact?
I think, Harold, that we understand that it's going to require hearing from lots of different people. There are many of us in our community who do listen to celebrities.
And so if we can get celebrities to say the messages that are, have to do with truth and relevant information, then that is very important. But I think ultimately we've got to have an arbiter of truth, an arbiter of facts, an arbiter of good judgment. Our black health professionals have spent a lifetime training to be just that. But what I really like about his comment the most, Harold, is that he says, thank you. He says, thank you. And what we as health professionals are saying back to our community, thank you. But this is a love-based conversation. This is a conversation where our community is saying to itself, we care about each other. Once we can establish and locate our fight against this virus in a caring and love perspective, we can do anything. And the last thing I'll say is that what we certainly, in the clip you played before this one, and we talked about trust, I want to extend that idea a little bit more, that when we as people have to take to the streets to say that our lives matter, that black lives matter, we need all of the health system, those who are white and other races, all of them have to recognize that when a group of people this large in a country have to declare that their lives make a difference, everybody's got to come out and reinforce that, because that's where we get this trust back. So we, in this letter to Black America, we are saying we love you and we're going to fight for you. We're going to do the things we need to do within our control, but we're also going to hold the rest of the healthcare system accountable for how they treat black patients. We're going to be the ears and eyes and the conscience to make sure that every way we can, we're going to fight for the dignity and the survival of our people.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about a love letter to Black America from America's Black Doctors and Nurses. So, Dr. Dawson, what is the thing that worries you most about your constituency, the black nurses? What is the thing that you are hearing the most from them that concerns you?
The thing that most concerns me at this time is that we have to remember that our black nurses, we are just a small population still of the U.S. population. So they're experiencing the same thing many others are experiencing at this time. You know, yes, they may still be working, but they may have relatives who have been laid off. So they may be trying to take care of a brother or a sister or some nieces or nephews, financially, that is. They're also concerned about the fact that we keep hearing this word, so many people have recovered from COVID. But we know as healthcare workers that what that means is that people don't have acute symptoms anymore. So we don't know whether they recovered in terms of what's going to be in the future for these individuals, especially our young adults that are age, let's say 18 to 45, those that are still in their reproductive years. We don't know if 3 years down the road what's going to occur with them. We don't know all of the mental health effects. You know, we hear about people who say, well, I've recovered, but I'm tired, I'm sleepy, I have brain fog. All of these things is concerning to us as frontline caregivers, because we understand that many times when you have an illness or a disease or a virus, it may take years before we understand what is going to happen to us. So for us, it is about caring for us today and doing the right thing today so that we can prevent as many people from catching this virus as we can so that next year we'll still be around. So we understand that it's going to take the voice of the researchers and the scientists and the nurses and the physicians coming together collectively. And someone mentioned about, you know, using some of the athletes and movie stars. Yes, some of those people have been out there speaking, and we want them to continue to speak. But what we understand and what we're doing right now, we want to put out a clarion call to all of our people to listen to your trusted individuals in the healthcare
profession at this time. Join in with us. Follow the public health practices that we are saying. Wear your mask. Wash your hands. Stay 6 feet apart. Avoid large gatherings. Stay at home if you don't have to be out. Now, I know we can say we're getting tired, but I'm just going to have to put it very plain tonight. Would you rather be tired and still alive, or do you want the alternative of not practicing these things, end up in the hospital, and not be healthy? Again, I was looking at the news this weekend, and my heart was broken to hear a mother talk about her 13-year-old son that she was just about to lose. She said, my son didn't want to go back to school. He was afraid of this. But he went back because he wanted to play football. She said, and now I don't know whether he's going to make it. That's a hard reality. And we need to step back and let's do some of the simple things to save a life for tomorrow.
Dr. Tuckson, I don't know whether or not you saw, did you see 60 Minutes last night?
Just a little bit of it.
The first story was fascinating, and they were talking about people who, as Dr. Dawson just mentioned, have quote-unquote recovered from COVID-19, but were still having some recurring effects. They called them the long haulers.
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit, if you can, about what that means and the serious realities of those who have survived but are still dealing with some of these issues.
One of the great frustrations that this virus has visited on us is its unpredictability. And we have so much more to learn about it because we can't explain all the reasons why. But there are a very large number of people whose reaction to the virus itself, because of what the virus does, or because of our immune systems responding in an overdrive capacity, we are seeing long-term consequences in things such as that Dr. Dawson mentioned in terms of brain fog. We're seeing it in extraordinary levels of fatigue. We're seeing it in damage to hearts and damages to lungs and a variety of other elements. And so what is important from your question is that people do need to realize that even when people survive, a significantly large number of people are going to be carrying the consequences of this disease for a long period of time or may never get over all of the consequences. And so this is another reason why we need to be really, really aware that you don't want to get this disease. That's the real deal. You do not want to get this disease.
You know, Dr. Dawson, one of the things that was in that 60 Minutes report last night, and it was just fascinating. I was, you know, riveted, but of course, you know, this is the kind of stuff I eat up. But one of the experts said that they are seeing more people in hospitals who are in the younger age range, those who are in their early 20s all the way up to 40. And in two of the examples, both of them people of color last night, one was a marathon runner and one was a personal trainer. You can't get any more fit than that. And yet both of these women were having, you know, kind of the, you know, the residual effects of, you know, of COVID-19, loss of balance, the brain fog, as you mentioned. Are nurses seeing the ages drop, or is it still a kind of a hodgepodge of age groups?
I'm hearing from different hotspots. Everything is hot spot almost now, though.
Yes, ma'am.
For example, in certain states, you're seeing more younger people that are indeed coming down with this. I think, again, part of it had to do with some of the schools open up. And when I say school, I don't just mean the public school, but I'm talking about the university, where it's harder to control some of the what the kids are going to be doing when they're not around mom and dad. And let's just face it, universities cannot keep up with kids when over the weekend or after school or when they're out, you know, of class. So I think that spread is happening more and more. And one of the things, again, some young people are still thinking back to those earlier days and times when this virus first got started and everyone kept saying, well, it's affecting the older people more. You know, this is primarily the elderly that are dying from this. It's primarily people that are in the nursing home. Well, guess what? It just had not gotten to us yet that are younger. And so now what we are beginning to see is people don't understand, again, I can be feeling fine today. And I can go and get a test 5 days later and I test negative, okay? But then I start feeling bad around about day 7 or 8. I go get another test and I'm positive. Guess what? I've probably been positive for the last 12 to 14 days, and how many people have I been around during that time that I probably already have given this disease to? And so, again, it's not about I'm young and I'm healthy, so I'm not going to catch this. No. You're seeing more and more younger people on ventilators. And one of the other things that came out from a medical perspective was that a lot of young people were complaining of headaches, or they would go into the emergency room saying their legs are hurting. And the next thing they found out is that they have blood clots, and they got to put them on the ventilators because of that. So when you're dealing with the unknown, you don't take risk. And that would be, and I guess I look at it this way. It would be foolish of me if I can't swim for me to go out there and jump in the ocean. And so I just want people to start putting this into some common sense reality and just taking it a day at a time and saying, if I don't need to be out, do I have to go out? How do I monitor myself when I'm out? And the other thing that I just like to bring up, because one of the physicians mentioned this last week when we was on a talk show together. Think for those of us who are old enough and we remember AIDS. You know, a lot of us didn't do the right thing and take the right precaution during that time. And many of us ended up with AIDS. Even today, if you go and look at it, in the rural area, you're finding more elderly females that are catching AIDS. Why? Because we're not following some of the public health precautions that are out there, things that we know will protect us. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about protecting ourselves and protecting others. Because if I wear a mask, I'm protecting you.
You know what?
If you don't have on a mask, you are exposing me.
You know what? You know, you just made an incredibly important point. And I wanted to ask Dr. Tuckson about a couple of things, but you raised something that I found fascinating. I am old enough to remember when it took a long time for then President Ronald Reagan to even mention HIV/AIDS. But I don't remember, and you correct me if I'm wrong here, Dr. Tuckson, during, you know, when AIDS became, you know, this, you know, first this epidemic in the United States, I don't ever remember anyone not saying that they did not believe it was real. And if they did, that didn't last very long. What's the difference?
Interesting comment. So, but one nuance to your point, though, is back then, the disease was, again, this invisible thing that was amongst us. There was still, even though in the black community, there was an awful lot
conspiracy theories. Again, you know, that one of the biggest challenges I had when I was fortunate to be the health commissioner in D.C. during those times was that this was a virus that was being made by the CIA, and that it was in a lab that was inflicted on us. And we used that, many people used that as an excuse not to wear a condom when they were having sex, because this was all something that was inflicted on us by a mischievous white presence in a laboratory somewhere. So we did have that. But what's different, Harold, now than then is the prevalence of social media. The ability for nonsense and misinformation and outright lies to be promulgated in very effective and very targeted ways. Make no mistake, what's happening this time is that our community in particular is being deliberately targeted by people who are supplying us with misinformation through channels that health professionals cannot control, that cannot give their explanation to. So you're right. What's different today is social media and the ability for people to get a plethora of information that is not fact-checked or scientifically based, and a lot of that information deliberately pushed to do us harm.
And this piggybacks on something else I wanted to ask you, because last Friday, we had a conversation. We were, you know, talking about, you know, this issue, and we had a caller, and I mean, I literally was thinking, I really need Dr. Tuckson right now, because we had a caller who mentioned three things, and I bring them up now because I found it so disturbing that I couldn't let it go this entire weekend. And one of the things, and if you could, if you don't mind, you can kind of take these three things one at a time, because he said the first thing was, and this was a black man who called into the program, and he said, there is no proof in the labs. Now, I don't know what he does for a living. I don't know what his background is. I am not a physician, but that's what he said. There's no proof in the labs that this is real. I'm not sure exactly what that meant. I can honestly say, do I have proof? There's no proof in the labs? No, I just know that we were under 250,000, you know, late last week, and now we're close to 260,000 dead. That's enough for me. So, but what do you say, for example, to someone who says there's no proof in the labs that this is real?
Let me go really quickly so we can make sure we get to all three. So, first of all, obviously, the reason why it didn't make any sense, because it doesn't make any sense. We already know, first of all, that we've been able to genotype the virus. We know exactly where it came from. We know the species of animal that it came from. We've been able to be that precise about it. And as you now mentioned, we have a very specific genetic piece of information that can be turned into a wonderful vaccine that we now realize will be safe and effective, that is targeting specifically the receptor sites that have been identified with laser-like precision. So that would be an absurd statement for anyone to make on the preponderance of so many different data points to prove that to be ridiculous.
The second one, and I hadn't heard this in many, many, many months. He brought up 5G smartphone waves and connections. And he brought up, you know, Bill Gates and the fact that Bill Gates may be indeed responsible for this and smartphones being responsible for this, which again, respectfully, I don't want to necessarily, you know, ridicule, but I do think that people need to be informed and they need to be edified so that they are armed with the best information if they are listening. But talk to me about the 5G smartphone conspiracy thing.
There is simply no way that a biological entity called a virus, a piece of biological information, has any relationship whatsoever to waveforms from a cell phone. They have no relationship one to the other at all. And if one even tried to postulate, just giving this argument the most leeway I possibly can,
that somehow the cell phone weakened the immune system of human beings to make us more susceptible to the transmission of a virus. There's no way scientifically even that could even be possible. And as far as Bill Gates is concerned, this is one of the rumors that we know has been spread through the white supremacy Russian bot targeting of our social media. This is extraordinary. And by the way, if any of us who care about the diaspora, you know, the people who are putting money into safe vaccines and other interventions to save black life all around the world, I don't think there is anyone who has a better track record than Gates. So let's just remember how this person decided to use his money. He's using his money to do things that we would have asked anyone in his position to do on behalf of people in need. I don't understand at all how he winds up being the face of the upset and anger.
And I would, you know, say 3G, 4G, 5G, you know, don't let any, after talking on your smartphone without a mask, don't hand your phone to somebody else. I mean, you know.
I think you've hit upon it.
Yeah.
You've hit upon it, Harold. That is exactly the way we have to be worried. Is somebody not wearing a mask, not washing their hands, taking the virus, putting it on their phone, and then handing it to someone else? If that's the theory, then I can see it.
And finally, the one that I find, you know, rather, you know, most incredulous is this issue about nanobots in the vaccine, that they're going to, that these vaccines are going to be putting, you know, tracking nanobots and you know, into our bodies, and that's why he said he wouldn't get, you know, the vaccine. That is a tad bit bizarre to me.
It is not only bizarre, but unfortunately, it is dangerous and it is killing people. This rumor, Harold, is so prevalent. I've heard it so many times on so many radio shows and TV shows that I have done. And as a result, people, I think what people fail to realize is these kinds of nonsensical things actually cause some human beings to believe them. And they act on that nonsensical information in ways that can get them killed or people around them. So this isn't just a casual joke. This is serious business. There is no way that anyone could inject any nanotechnology. The information that's in a vaccine is so minute, so incredibly minute. But also, just try to play this theory out, if you will, very quickly in 10 seconds. And that is, exactly who would be monitoring something like, what would be the technology that you'd have? Who sits around and could evaluate 40 million people with things injected in their bodies? I mean, it is just so crazy that you can't even begin to get your mind around it. Let's be very clear. None of these things are true.
Dr. Dawson, how long have you been a nurse?
Oh, you want me to tell my age now?
I didn't ask you how old you were now.
44 years. Anyone can calculate that. But I've been a nurse for 44 years.
Why did you decide?
Why
did you decide to be a nurse? And there's a reason I'm asking.
Like most people, I wanted to become a nurse because I wanted to help people. And part of helping people also means loving people. And what I love about nursing is that, again, we try to take care of the whole person and their extended family. So we go into this looking at it as both an art as well as a science. Mm-hmm. And many of us consider it to also be a calling. So for me, I consider it to be a calling as well. And part of that calling is for me to try to help heal mankind. Again, whether I'm looking at it from a physical standpoint of what I could do to help that person, from a spiritual standpoint, or from a mental standpoint.
So this is why I ask, and this is going to be the last word in this, and this is a really important thing for nurses. In the beginning of the pandemic, we did an interview, and we were talking to nurses, and one of the nurses said that some of her professional peers, other nurses, particularly those who were new to the profession, said, I did not sign up for this. And she was, you know, rather emotional about it, understandably. For those nurses that are new to the profession, as a you know, as a veteran, as a seasoned nurse, and you have, you know, nurses who've only been in the profession for a year or two, what do you say to those who say, I have not signed up for this? What is the word, the wizened comment from you?
Well, I can remember being a young nurse when AIDS first came out, okay? And I can remember some of my colleagues then, they were afraid to take care of those patients. For me, I was never afraid to take care of them because I did sign up for this. I signed up to take care of people that were sick. I didn't try to define ahead of time what that sickness would look like. And so what I would say to them is don't give up on your passion and why you came into nursing just because of the space that we're in now. I've seen us go through some hard times, you know, I mean, so, you know, to be honest with you, the first hospital in the United States that actually did the drive-through flu shot, which is what we're actually mirror imaging this drive-through, you know, testing for COVID, was at a hospital where I was a young chief nursing officer. I would say regardless of what I've seen in nursing, if I had to go back and do it all over again, I would do it all over again. Because, again, I consider it to be both a privilege and an honor to be able to serve others, but I also feel that I've gained so much gratification from nursing. And I want people to understand, before we had COVID, we had something that was called MARS and SARS. This is just another stronger strain of viruses than those two. Yeah. And something is always going to be here. And if you're not a part of the solution, you're still going to be a part of the society that has to deal with it. Yeah. So I enjoy being on this healthcare side of it because I think I can do even more. So I would say hang in there. Don't give up, but lean in. And just like the letter said, love.
I think that's a great place to stop this conversation. Dr. Martha Dawson and Dr. Reed Tuckson, thank you both for talking to us, and be safe as always. This podcast will be on our website on WHUR.com, and we're going to post a link to the love letter to the Black community from Black health professionals. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Monday, November 23rd. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night.